A Priori by Memphis 86. He woke up in a bed that wasn't his own. There's really nothing else to say. Not much else happened when he woke up that first time. The room was small and the bed was narrow. It was too short and his feet hung over the edge. So it wasn't his. He curled his long legs up to his chest and went back to sleep. Hours pass and he moves in and out of consciousness until he cracks open an eye and sees a stranger sitting in a chair beside his bed. The old man is wearing simple black robes and reading a torn copy of some book. He squints and tries to make out the title, but one of his eyes is bandaged shut. He hadn't noticed until now. He puts shaking fingers to his face and feels around the edges of the bandages and presses lightly against the skin. It's the first sensation of pain that sets all the others off, like waking up a switchboard, all the lights and nerves shooting in all directions. It's in spikes and pulses of pain, and not just his eye, but his arm and his legs and his chest, and he screams hoarsely. The old man has dropped his book and holds him by the shoulders. He cries out, "David! David!" But whoever David is, he doesn't come. When the adrenaline tapers off, he falls down on the mattress, panting. Everything still hurts and his brain is beating against his skull. The room goes black. Awake again, the man is kneeling against the bed. Whispered prayers are warm puffs of air in his ear. He's accompanied by a younger man who places a glass of water to his lips. He drinks what he can bear to swallow. When he could sit up, the old man rose from his side. "David?" He doesn't say anything but looks at the younger monk. Monks. They're both dressed as monks. He realizes he's in a monastery. He sees the stained glass pictures on the windows, the cross, the wood, the telltale ascetic features of his room. It screams of simplicity and piety, even the air smells of it. He feels the weight of the religious overtones that hang in the room, and he feels unworthy of them, like a sudden pang of guilt. The pictures of saints stare at him. He doesn't deserve this. "David Johnson, that's you," the younger man says to him. He presses his lips together into a thin line, licks them. "David?" the old man asks him again. "Yes," he replies in a weak voice. The old man smiles. There's a doctor who explains things the next day. He had been in an accident. A horrible one he was lucky to have walked away from. There was brain damage. Amnesia. Significant long-term memory loss. Short-term memory functions were also affected. His left eye was probably blinded. They would know for sure when the bandages could come off. Most of the other injuries, the sprained ankle, the cuts and bruises, would heal sooner. But the memory thing, it would require patience and practice to fix. He may not ever get back all of his memories, but he could teach himself to regain as much of his brain functions as possible. He had been identified by an ID card in his wallet, an out-of-state driver's license. The photo is kind of scratched up, and he can't really see any details of his face, but the monk swears it's his. His name is David Johnson, though calls and letters to his home address went nowhere. It was obviously a fake ID, David thought, turning it over in his hand. The monks and the doctor seemed not as inclined to care. The monastery, St. Basil's, is located just outside of Katona, Ohio. The town is small and well-to-do. The countryside is gorgeous, though prone to flooding when it rains. There are muddy patches and banks marring the green of the land. He sees them when they drive back. The old monk, Father Anthony, tells him he can stay there as long as he wants to. He says, specifically, that St. Basil's is a refuge for people like him. There are other people like him. Father Anthony was right. All the people who walked the halls of St. Basil's had an equally strange or horrifying sob story. They were all victims of tragedy, staying there to try and piece their lives back together. David spends hours listening to their stories and then transcribing them into the notebooks the monks give him. It's an exercise to help retrain his short-term memory. He reads them back the next day to Father Anthony and Father Priam. After retelling the particularly heartbreaking story of a woman whose husband had his heart torn out and eaten by a wild animal, Father Priam smiles and tells David he should be a writer. David mumbles a thank you and locks himself in his room. He burns the notebooks in the hearth the next morning. When the bandages come off his left eye, things don't look any better. The doctor frowns as he moves his flashlight back and forth. I'm afraid it's not good news. The doctor leaves to prep some machines so they could test it, but David already knows he's blind in that eye. He'd spent 2 weeks with it bandaged shut and managed just fine. He steps over to the mirror and finally gets a good look at himself. He hadn't wanted to look too closely before, still having trouble recognising the stranger looking back. But there he was, tall and broad, long limbs and huge hands, shaggy brown hair and one hazel eye, the other startlingly different. Bright and red around the skin, the iris so light grey that it's practically white. The pupil nothing more than a pinhole. I look like one of those dogs, he says aloud to no one. David keeps to himself mostly. He runs chores for the monks, carries heavy things, caskets of wine, and helps clean the monastery. Father Priam was trying to encourage him to take writing classes at the local community college, but he didn't want to speak with people anymore. Ever since the bandages came off, he'd felt exposed. He didn't like the staring, didn't like explaining how he got his head knocked up so bad that he went half blind and has trouble remembering things. He can't recall his parents' names and only assumes he's 29 because it's what's written on his fake driver's license, which he knows is fake, so he doesn't even know what to believe about himself. He accepts the lies because it's easier than looking for truth. There's no leads for him to follow. Father Anthony and Father Priam didn't know him from Cain before. There are moments when he gets close, when he stands in front of the mirror and says his name over and over. David Johnson. David Johnson. David Johnson. And he starts feeling familiar and smiles. And he catches himself and stops. David doesn't have depth perception, and he never dreams. Ever. There's not much else for him to do on his downtime but read. David devours every book in the library and reads the Bible cover to cover. He particularly likes the book of Job and asks Father Anthony if that means anything. Father Anthony has a twinkle in his eye and asks him if he thinks it means something. David decides he hates people that answer questions with questions. He likes yes or no answers. It's raining on a Tuesday, pouring down in buckets, and he and Father Priam are quietly discussing the parable of the prodigal son when the doors slam open and 3 drenched figures run in. Father Priam stands up with David as they watch them dry off. It's a man in a leather jacket, a woman in a wet flowered dress and a small cardigan. Beside her, a young girl in overalls hugs her leg. The woman carries a shoulder bag and a child's backpack. The man has nothing. Father Anthony comes out of his office and claps his hands together. He approaches the man, who shakes his hand and is drawn into a simple hug. Father Priam stops David from approaching them. David hadn't realized he was moving away from the pew. He hears bits and pieces of the conversation, recognizes the emotions and tones of voices. The room carries echoes well enough. Father Anthony greets the man like an old friend, shakes the woman's hand and pats her daughter's head, tells them they're welcome to stay as long as they need to. The man asks something of Father Anthony and he nods and walks away with him. Father Priam walks towards the woman and lets David trail along this time. He introduces himself and asks their names. The woman nods and smiles. Sheila Smith, and this is my daughter Eleanor. They chat for a while, avoiding mentioning the tragedy that must have brought them here. Father Priam smiles and turns to David and whispers, "The names?" David hates this. It's in his head, but he can't catch it on his tongue exactly, and he blurts out, see something? Smith and..." David scrunches his face tight and the little girl laughs. "Eleanor," she coos, and David wants to die. Father Priam leads them away to their quarters and explains David's condition. Through the echoes, he can hear Eleanor asking about his eye. Father Anthony walks back into the hallway, his conversation trailing off. "Right here if you wanted to see him." The man nods and smiles. He's soaking wet with short, light hair and a scar along his forehead. He walks with a limp and has a bottle of wine underneath his arm. He holds out a hand to David. "Dean Winchester." David nods and shakes his hand. "I'm David." Dean gives him an odd little smile. "Hi, David." David comes to understand Dean Winchester is not one of the victims St. Basil's helps. Rather, he brings people that need help to them. Dean doesn't speak much about who he is and where he comes from, other than the basic facts. He gives David yes or no answers, and David likes him more and more. Not just because of the fact that he doesn't dance around things, or say cryptic shit like the monks, but because Dean is letting him drink his wine. Father Anthony and Father Priam never drink, and David always feels too awkward to ask. Dean is funny. He smiles and cracks jokes and makes fun of the gnarly scar running across his head and calls himself Gimpy because of his leg. David decides he likes him a whole lot. The only faux pas he commits is when he tries to call David Davy. David politely corrects him and says that he prefers his full name. And Dean chuckles and says okay. Dean then starts to question David about what he does at St. Basil's, what he plans to do further down the road, how he deals with what happened to him. David feels a rapport with Dean that he can't explain, so he doesn't feel weird about answering that he really doesn't know what he wants to do. He tells him things only a little easier for him every day, but it's pretty fucking horrible to begin with. David opens up about his fears and his anxieties and his frustrations with his memory, and Dean just listens and pours out the rest of the wine and licks the neck of the bottle where some had trickled down. David's stomach flips a little. "Hey, David, just one more question. Are you happy? I mean, not just happy here, but are you happy in general?" David screws up his face and he can't answer. Dean mumbles, "Never mind," and finishes off his drink. Eleanor and her mother walk by, and she points and says with all the conviction of a mean little schoolgirl, "Mummy, he has the evil eye too." Her mother shushes her and scoots her along faster, offering David a sympathetic smile. David wants to run to his room, but Danger scoffs and says, "What a bitch." David fixes him with a strange look. "Dean, she's like 7. Still not an excuse to be a bitch. Dude, that eye is awesome. You look like one of those dogs. Or David Bowie. Hey, that could be your new nickname. David Bowie." David smiles. "Ask me again." "What?" "Ask me again if I'm happy." "Are you happy?" "Right now?" "Yeah. Right now I am." Dean nods. "That's good to know." David doesn't think too much of Dean's probing questions for him. He hasn't had someone he could even begin to think of as a friend in so long. He's just glad for the chance to spend some time with him. He walks Dean to his car and waves as a black Chevy Impala speeds off. When he goes back inside, Father Priam asks, "What was his name?" "Dean Winchester, from Lawrence, Kansas. He took 3 bottles of wine but drank one here. He drives a black Chevy Impala." "He's awesome," David doesn't add. Father Anthony smiles and offers David some fresh grapes, and Father Priam gives him a satisfied little nod. David thinks about what it means to be happy. He reads the Bible more and continues to devour the library in search of what could make him happy. He thinks about what it means to lead a good life, what ethics are, and the limits of reason. He feels like a scholar, but yearns for the company of others to discuss. Father Anthony never gives straight answers, and Father Priam treats him like a child without realizing. He turns back to writing and tries to find his happiness. He decides that he likes being social and he starts talking to people again. He leaves the monastery to run errands and sits in coffee shops writing and people watching. He chats up customers and the waitstaff know how he takes his coffee. They also become patient with him when he forgets that he's already ordered his food. They figured out that he doesn't actually want 3 cups of coffee and 2 tuna melts. Children still point at his eye, but he laughs and thinks about David Bowie. David has the closest thing to a dream he's had in months. It's Dean in front of his Impala, turning to him and smiling. David wants to push him up against the car but can't move. 2 weeks later, Dean shows up. It's a clear day this time, sunny and warm. David is in the cloisters reading Emerson. He hears footsteps against the stone floor and looks up to see Dean and Father Anthony. Dean is without his leather jacket this time, covered in what he hopes is road dust, but looks a bit nastier. He's got a small bag slung over his shoulder, and he walks by quickly toward the guest quarters. He flips David a small wave, and Father Anthony turns to speak with him. "Dean's back," he says, and Father Anthony nods. "He's brought some people with him again. Would you like to... Is he staying with us?" "For tonight, yes. I had to talk him out of sleeping in his car." Dean wants to make it up to Anchorage by Friday. "I told him to at least stay for a while and get some rest. Fill up the car and take some supplies." "Is that where he lives?" "Not really. He travels around." David laughs. "He sleeps in his car?" "When he sleeps at all." "What does he do exactly?" "Dean does good things for people. He helps them when they need it." "Like you and Father Prime?" Father Anthony laughs. "He has a more hands-on approach than we do, but yes." So he's like some kind of hero to some people. Father Anthony stands up and motions for him to follow. I promised him a case of wine this time. Would you help me carry it upstairs? David brings the wine out when he knows Dean's there. He hasn't showered yet and is covered in filth. The hood of his car is popped, and he's rummaging around, looking for something with a flashlight. David clears his throat, and Dean turns and hits him with a smile, and deja vu washes all over David. Hey, Dean. Hey, David. Dean leans back against the car and nods towards the case. You can put that down wherever. I need to borrow your hands. David swallows and puts the wine down near him and walks over to Dean, who hands him a flashlight, and he shines it over the hood as Dean dives back in. Father Anthony said you were spending the night. Yeah, maybe. Quick bite and a shower first. I gotta get all the way up to Alaska by Friday. What are you doing there? Just some lousy job. Can you move to the left? Thanks. It's gonna be cold there. Dean turns and gives him a weird little look before David realizes how stupid and obvious that comment was. Yeah, it's pretty cold in Alaska. Velvet Underground, David mumbles, and Dean either doesn't hear him or ignores him, and he gets back to work. David thinks he's such a freak that he can remember a random line from a song, but he can't remember when he heard it. He feels like a teenager again, or what he assumes he was like as a teenager, awkward and fidgety, not knowing how exactly to say what he wants to. Everything coming out in wrong little spurts of words. Dean turns some more screws and fiddles around a bit before declaring, "Done," and slamming the hood down. He's got an accomplished look and snatches a flashlight back. I'm going to take a much-needed shower. Tell Father Tony I like my steak rare. David laughs and grabs the case again and asks, "Should I put this away?" "Yeah, in the back." Dean opens the back seat door and frowns at the lack of room, starts moving things around, and David just pops the trunk like it's nothing. There's a false bottom and he pulls it up just as Dean yells, "Don't!" It's incredible, the sheer amount of stuff he's got stashed in there. Machetes, boxes of bullets, smaller knives, some clean and some stained with God knows what. There are guns of every kind and shape and size. It's like a museum of weaponry. Dean's behind him, stammering to explain it all. David turns around and stares into his panicked eyes. Wow, you really are some kind of hero, right? Dean shuffles his feet and looks down, muttering and nodding. Dinner is quiet and cordial. When Father Anthony and Father Prime retire, Dean gets up and starts heading out. David follows him all the way to his car, practically begging him to reconsider. You're not staying? Really? If I start now, I can clear a couple hundred miles before I need to stop. If you stay, you could drive most of the way tomorrow. Nah, I better go. Wouldn't want to wear out my welcome. I'm sure Father Anthony would love for you to stay. David, I have to go, okay? Okay. And David feels like a brat. But he just wants to stamp his feet and whine at Dean and make him stay. I'll come by again when I need to. Look, you're okay, right? You're doing better? You're happy here? Yeah. David looks around, up at the sky, and tries to concentrate on the web of stars instead of meeting Dean's eyes. Not having depth perception is a funny thing. He knows they're far away, but they don't always look so hard to get. Like he could reach his hand up and pull down a couple. then that's all that matters. David says something under his breath. What was that? Said I'd be happier if you stuck around. David feels his face burn a little and quickly adds, I mean, to talk and you're funny, to have around. Here. Dean claps David on the shoulder and looks him right dead in the eye. I promise, I'll come by and stay a whole day. Around here. Dean drives into the night and David thinks about Alaska. Dean was going to Alaska. David asks Father Anthony about the people Dean's helped, how he helped them, why he did it. Father Anthony is still cagey about giving him exact answers, and Father Prion gives him no answers at all. In fact, Father Prion balks when David refers to Dean as some kind of hero. David quickly realizes that Father Prion does not care for Dean Winchester one bit. It just makes him like Dean even more. He tries questioning the old man Dean brought with him as delicately as he can. His eyes are tired, and the old man says to David that he wouldn't believe him if he told him the truth. David presses on, and finally the old man looks at him and asks, Do you believe in ghosts? He doesn't wait for an answer before launching into a story about how he met a woman when he was young and had an affair with her. She was married, and the husband went mad with rage, killed her and then shot himself. The ghost of the jilted man had been calling to him for decades, thinking if it could seek vengeance, it would be at peace. Dean had sent the ghost away, saved him and his grandchildren who had been visiting him. The children were with a family friend. He was at St. Basil's to make peace with what he did, how his actions and inactions had led to the death of his beloved and the destruction of an innocent soul. After all that, David has to lie down for a few hours. He doesn't think about Dean for weeks. But the dreams start to signify Dean's arrival, and this time he pictures Dean handing him a stack of books. It's so bright and hot outside, David drives into town and buys sunglasses and iced coffee. He's got the radio on loud. They're playing Talking Heads and he sings along horribly off key. When he pulls into the driveway, Dean is there, leaning against the hood of the Impala. He's got a square green bag at his feet and a knowing smirk. David resists the urge to jump out of the car and run to him. By the time he walks over to Dean, he's got this big, stupid smile on his face. You know, I was thinking I could just make my escape and you'd never know the difference. But then I thought I could probably scam another free meal out of Father Tony if I stuck around and entertained his errand boy. It's only the third time he's ever seen Dean, but David feels okay to tease him back. Tell the truth, Dean. Your leg gave out, and now you're stuck there waiting for me to come help you. Hey, don't tease the gimp. If you live in a monastery, you can't tease gimps. It's a rule. David laughs, and Dean stands up, reaching into his bag. Father Tony told me you were running out of things to read. I've been trying to get rid of these for a while. He hands him a few books. Wow, thanks. David turns them over. They're worn and he flips through a few pages. Law books? Yeah, they've been lying around for too long. Thought you could give them a good home. David is fully aware that hugging them to his chest like a 12-year-old girl isn't scoring any cool points with Dean. He convinces Dean it's too nice of a day to be inside, so they take a walk around the grounds. David moves slowly, and Dean accuses him of coddling him in a mocking tone. They walk down to the small garden Father Prion keeps, and it's there that David finally gets up his nerve. Dean? Yeah? Dean doesn't look up right away. You save people, right?
I try.
He turns his head and looks at David. I've been trying to remember.
Don't.
You saved me, right? You brought me here, didn't you? That's why you always talk to me. You're always checking up on me, making sure I'm okay, asking me if I'm happy here.
David,
you're like my hero.
For once, Dean is speechless. David moves forward, and without really thinking, he hugs him.
Dean hugs him back and pats him twice.
Okay, that's enough.
I'd probably be dead. David, stop it, okay? Just stop it. Let it go.
David waits a few moments and apologizes. Dean brushes him off and says,
this was a bad idea. I'm going to get out of here.
He takes off an hour later, and David goes up to his room and locks himself in there the rest of the day. He throws the books in a corner. It's been a week, and his shock at what Dean did has turned into anger and frustration at what happened. Why did Dean have to leave? Why couldn't he just have stayed like he said he would?
David shakes it off. His mind tends to wander when he thinks about Dean. He'll be listening to Father Prime speak, and then Dean will creep into his head, and his attention is elsewhere. He forgets about being hungry or thirsty, or whatever it is he has to do at any given moment. When he finally decides his curiosity has the best of him, he starts reading the books Dean gave him. His mind needs intellectual stimulation, craves it, keeps him awake at night. There's a name, though, on all the books that jumps out at him. Property of Sam Winchester. Winchester rattles around his brain, setting off tiny sparks, until David finally made the necessary logic leap. Dean's last name was also Winchester. Dean and Sam Winchester. How are they connected? Father Anthony and Father Prime knew. Sam was Dean's younger brother. Died 2 or 3 years ago, before you knew him. He took it pretty bad. Father Prime nodded. Lost his father in 07, I think, and his mother when he was a child. Sam was all he had left.
Did either of you know Sam?
Only what Dean would tell us. He never came by, no. David thanked him for the information, and as he was about to leave, Father Anthony added, Dean must really think a lot of you to give you something that belonged to Sam.
I guess so.
I think he's quite fond of you. Father Anthony had a twinkle in his eye that monks should not have. David flushed, and Father Prime turned an interesting shade of pink, but otherwise remained silent. David leaves the optometrist with a prescription for eyeglasses. He got pulled over for speeding, and when the cop found out he was half blind, he gave him a ticket and an order to see an eye doctor within 90 days. David is fuming when he gets back. The bus takes forever. He has to get money to buy glasses, and Father Priam will probably want to drive him and make him pick out the most sensible pair. As if he didn't already look like a freak. He's only going to wear them for driving, but still. There was no warning. Dean is just there in Father Anthony's office, leaning back in his chair, his leg propped up on the desk. He's gesturing his arms wildly and saying, but I don't get why I gotta call you Father Tony and Prime gets to call you brother. I want to call you Brother Tony. Father Anthony laughs. We refer to one another as brother, but are known to others as father.
So it's really that bad if I call you brother?
Yes, it's disrespectful, David can't help interjecting. And he feels like he's Father Prime, waggling his finger back and forth at Dean. Dean shrugs.
Well, forgive me, Father?
Of course, Dean.
Father Anthony looks at David. How did it go?
David worries his lip.
I need glasses.
He looks at Dean.
For driving. Dean doesn't laugh or make fun, just nods. Father Anthony's already reaching into his desk, pulling out a strongbox.
I swear I'll pay you back.
Father Anthony tut-tuts his protests and hands him the money. He technically works for the monastery for free room and board. He gets a stipend sometimes, but it's not very much.
Is Father Prime around? I need a ride back into town, David asks.
Father Anthony shakes his head. I'm afraid he's out this afternoon. Took the car down to St. Ludwig's for a conference.
Oh, I guess I'll go tomorrow.
Nonsense. Dean wouldn't mind giving you a ride, would he?
Of course not.
Dean stands. Come on, David. Let's go get you a monocle or something cool. David sighs inwardly and nods. The only reason that David agrees to go with Dean is because the sooner he gets his glasses, the sooner he can drive again and have some semblance of freedom. And though he'd never admit it, he really does want to ride in the Impala. It's just such a pretty car, all sleek and black and powerful. So he folds his arms and follows Dean outside. Dean's still going on about how much cooler a monocle would look than a pair of glasses.
I mean, it's just the one eye, right? Why have the extra lens? It's wasteful, David. You have got to get a monocle, for the sake of the environment.
I'm not wearing a monocle, Dean, David says and opens the passenger door. The seat is all the way back. Dean scoffs and slides into his side easily. Looks up at David and makes a circle with his index finger and thumb in front of his face.
Yeah, I'm not digging it so much anymore. Let's get you some x-ray specs.
David shakes his head and sits down, pulling the door shut, and realizes that his knees haven't hit the dash. In fact, he's quite comfortable.
You always keep the seat this far back?
Dean pulls out onto the road.
Yeah, I run a little side business driving around basketball players and giants.
David snorts.
Ah, see? I knew that'd get you.
What are you talking about?
Nothing.
Dean flips on the music and David loses himself in the grinding guitars and the pounding drums. It's not the art school 70s punk rock he's been listening to, but it's a distraction.
Hey, if you smile, I'll let you pick the music.
David gives Dean a cross look. He knows he's supposed to be upset at Dean, but he really can't remember why. Details still escape him. Sometimes he just has to trust his feelings.
And if you cheer the hell up and actually try to have some fun with this, I might.
Dean stops at the traffic light and looks directly at David. Let you drive on the way back.
A little.
David feels stubborn and torn. Normally, he would leap at the chance to drive Dean's Impala. He's fully aware of how gorgeous the car is. But he's supposed to feel lousy today. He needs glasses and has to take a handout from Father Anthony to get them. And he should feel horribly guilty and angry at himself for being half blind and... And Dean's smile is infectious. He spends most of the ride into town cracking jokes at David. By the time they get to the optician, he's grinning. David wiggles the glasses on his nose. They're simple wireless frames and so lightweight that he keeps worrying that they're not on. They make everything magnified, and he gets a little dizzy when he looks over the edge of the lens and back again. Dean is talking to him while he sits in the driver's seat, making sure David knows the proper protocol for driving his car, and that he will hunt him down and skin him alive if anything happens to his baby. David nods and places his hands on the wheel.
Okay then.
Dean saunters over to the passenger side and closes the door. Go for it. David turns the key and the car fires to life. The engine purrs so nice and the lift is amazing. They're peeling down the highway in no time, and David's hand automatically goes to the radio knob, finds his favourite college rock station. Dean whines a little as the sounds of Jesus and Mary Chain fill the car, but David ignores him. Dean sits back and seems to let his tension go. David can see him looking over at him. A lot. It's almost distracting the way Dean looks at him, and David bites his lip. Dean leans his head back and his eyes just slip shut. There's no yawn, no signs of his fatigue from before. He just conks out. And David wonders when the last time he slept was. David gets back at the monastery, but he lets Dean sleep. He doesn't want to wake him up just yet. He crosses his arms and pillows his head on the steering wheel, watches the rise and falls of Dean's chest, listens to the deep, heavy breathing. It's close to half an hour before Dean opens his eyes. "Where did I come from?" David blurts out. "Huh?" Dean is groggy and shakes his head. "Where did you find me?" Dean blinks and rolls his head back against the seat. "California," Dean finally says. "Found you in California." California's a big place. Dean can't manage to give him any specifics when he tries to ask. California could be his home. He could go there and try to find somewhere familiar. Dean starts to nod off again. "Dean, you need me to help you upstairs?" Dean opens the side door and gets out. "Nah, Sammy, I got it." He sways on his feet. David gets out and loops his arms around Dean. He must still be half asleep, thinking he was his brother. "Anything else you want to tell me while you're feeling open, Dean?" David laughs. "I'm sorry." "Sorry for what?" "I shouldn't have let you go without more of a fight." David nods as he walks Dean to the guest rooms. "You're talking to Sammy, right?" "I'm so sorry, I couldn't keep my promise." David walks Dean up the stairs. "I'm sure Sammy knows," David says, opening the door. "Sammy's gone. But that's okay." "Yeah?" David lets him down on the nicest bed he could find. Dean lies on his back, flat. "It's okay. You're here now." David never ever tells Dean what he said to him that day, because David forgets about it an hour later. He knows Dean was talking to him about something and then fell asleep. The little details of the conversation vanish. Something about his brother. Oh well. Dean's visits are more frequent. From every month to every couple of weeks, then to weekly visits, Dean becomes a regular fixture at the monastery, and he and David are constant companions. He goes on drives into town with him, helps him with the grocery shopping. They make each other laugh, and Dean even makes him go to a bar one night. David can't remember the last time he had a beer that nice. When Dean isn't off on a job of his own, he's just there. David likes that he's so used to Dean's presence that it's become familiar and comfortable. It makes it easier to push forward. David lost Dean's conversation about 2 minutes in as they walked through the corridor. He really was trying to concentrate, but his mind blanks and all he can do is watch Dean's mouth move. He's puzzled to how they got on the topic of honeybees, but he loses it again in Dean's eyes. And then suddenly he's talking about pancakes and David is leaning forward and kissing Dean, tasting maple syrup on his breath, and realizing Dean was talking about what he had for breakfast. Dean spazzes out like David never anticipated he could, stuttering and shaking, and David just squeezes Dean's hand and tells him he's been waiting forever to do that. David leans closer, and Dean backs himself into a wall. David kisses him again and again, light little touches across his mouth, and Dean's heart is beating so fast he can hear it. Dean eventually wriggles himself out of David's grasp and sputters some more. I'm going to go outside now. Just wait right here. Dean shakes his head and points to David and says sternly, "Don't move. I'll be back. And don't move." David waits in the spot Dean told him to for a good 10 minutes, and then he gets restless. He sticks his head out the window and spies Dean pacing on the ground below. He's walking back and forth, having some kind of intense conversation with himself. There's so much arm-waving and gesturing and head-grabbing. David worries he's done something terrible to Dean, to leave him in such a panic. Then Dean starts up this strange little ritual, where he gets very close to coming back inside, but then turns around and paces some more. Comes close to the door again, shakes his head no, and walks back. He starts stop so many times that David gets dizzy. Dean's obviously not coming back inside any time soon, so he goes to his room and opens up a good book. Dean finally shows up at dinner when he announces he's leaving. A job in South Dakota has come in for him. David pouts but walks into his car like always. It's a bit chilly, so he crosses his arms and tries not to let Dean see his teeth chatter. "Hey, did I? I didn't mean to fuck things up back there, Dean. I'm sorry." He puts his hand on Dean's shoulder, but then quickly pulls it away. "No, you," Dean sighs. "You didn't fuck up, David. We're okay. Forget about it." David presses his lips together, but it's not enough to keep him silent. "I don't want to." Dean furrows his brow but lets David speak. "I want more than us being okay. I've been thinking." His eyes roam and he stares out at the land. "You and Father Anthony are always telling me to take the time and figure out my life. Find what makes me happy. You make me happy, Dean." David focuses on him. "You're the only one who makes me feel like this, and I can't..." David takes a deep breath. "Next time I see you, I'm gonna want to kiss you again. I need to know that's okay, that you're gonna kiss me back, and that you'll let me try to make you happy too. Just tell me there's any chance of this, that you could feel the same way for me. Please." "David." Dean ducks his head. "I don't come here for the food and the rest. I can get that anywhere. I come here to see you. Can't that be enough?" "Not anymore." Dean swallows. "It's not that easy. I'm always going to be... I'm never going to feel exactly the same way you do. And God, I just want you to be happy. And now you're telling me this? It's just a lot for me to take in right now, okay?" "So there's no chance?" David trails off. Dean doesn't answer. He just gets in his car and pulls away. 2 days later, Dean is most certainly not in South Dakota. He's sitting in the pews when David gets back from running his chores in town. Dean stands and his bad leg trembles. "Hi, Dean," David says, trying to keep the quiver out of his voice. Dean doesn't say anything, and that's fine because he's an amazing kisser. David's head swims and his body is rocked with little electric thrills all up and down, and he presses his fingers into Dean's arms. The leather of his jacket is worn and gives just enough under the pressure of his hands. Dean pulls back and pants a bit. "This is crazy. I should just leave you alone." "Don't you dare." David interrupts and buries his nose in Dean's hair. He nuzzles him and knows he loves him already. Dean fits right into the juncture of his neck and shoulder and whispers, "Don't tell anyone, okay?" It starts out slowly. There's no dating or anything, not like David thought would happen. It's all physical, touching and kissing and blood rushing to the head moments. They're making out in the basement, surrounded by giant vats of wine and scripture. David pulls back and holds Dean's face away from his. "I was going to ask you to tell me if you knew me before the accident." Dean starts to protest and fidget, but David shushes him and continues. "I was going to ask, but I don't care anymore. I've been thinking a lot about myself. How if there was anything worth remembering, anything important, you'd tell me. So maybe it's better that I don't remember, that I start things over." Dean looks down at his shoes. "I did something bad, didn't I? Something horrible that I don't need to know?" Dean nods. "It's okay, Dean. Dean pulls him close, wrapping arms around him, and David can feel his face turning red. He rubs the water out of his eyes and laughs in spite of it. "I'm over it, really. I have a better life. I have a second chance, right? That's what everybody wants. And I have you." David tugs at Dean's hands until he meets his gaze again. "But I have to ask. Did you always feel this way about me, Dean? Even when I was whoever I used to be?" Dean can't answer. He squeezes his face like it's in pain, and David just says, "Never mind," and buries himself in Dean's chest. "No, it's the way you are now. That's who I, you know." Dean is furrowing his brows so tight, and his eyes are straining. "You know what I mean, right?" "Yeah, I do." David smiles. Dean leaves for a job on Sunday. On Monday, David drives down to the local community college. He fills out mounds and mounds of paperwork, takes placement tests, and meets with an advisor. The fact is, he doesn't have a GED or high school degree on file, but they try to work around him. A week later, when all his tests come back with ridiculously high scores, he qualifies for enough academic scholarships that it's pretty much a free ride. Father Anthony is beaming, and Father Prime is as close to being excited as he can be. David signs up for courses on law, ethics, and theology. He grabs a pamphlet on paralegal certificates and tucks it in his bag. When Dean shows up on Thursday, he's ecstatic to hear what David did. "Whatever you want to do this weekend, man, the world's your oyster." David doesn't even need to hesitate. He knows what he wants. "I want to go see a movie with you and have dinner. And it's a date, like a real date. Also, you have to hold my hand in public." Dean's face is absolutely priceless. Katona on a Friday night is full of people buzzing around. David insists they go out on a traditional date night. The town is pretty small, but it's not that small-minded. There's an unspoken live-and-let-live rule. So when David grabs Dean's hand in the line for tickets, no one stirs, really. David thinks Dean is so jittery because he's from Kansas. He must have been raised with different values there. David squeezes his hand and mouths, "It's okay," when Dean looks at him. They get their tickets and go inside. Dean buys an armful of snacks, popcorn and candies, and he's stuffing his face before they even sit down. "You're gonna run out before the previews," David says as he sips his soda. Dean catches a gummy bear in his mouth and smiles. "That's assuming I actually want to see the previews." Dean goes back to his candy and David puzzles to himself. When the theatre goes dark and the screen lights up, Dean's hands are everywhere. David gets what he meant then. Dean plans on a traditional movie date, which means ignoring the movie in favour of as much making out and as much fooling around as possible, without breaking any public indecency laws, or at least not getting caught. David can go with that. Dean is sugary sweet and a little sticky from all the red vines, but David doesn't mind that much. There's the sounds of car explosions and gasps and pathetic dialogue of the action movie all around them. They must be close to a speaker because David's heart is fluttering with each pulsing noise. Or it could just be because Dean has his hands locked on the nape of his neck and the cold metal of his ring is tickling his skin. Dean pulls back and looks at the screen. David reels for a bit and opens his eyes. The light from the screen stings. His sight is pretty much fucked in the dark. He concentrates on the other senses, the feel of Dean's hands, the smell on his neck that he learns to inhale. Dean hisses and taps him. "Wait, wait, I want to see." There's a gunshot fired and a woman screams. "Ha, I knew the Czech was a spy," Dean whispers. You've actually been following the movie?" David balks. "Yeah, you haven't?" "I've been kinda distracted," David says, a little too loud, and somebody shushes him. Dean glares in their direction. Well, David assumes he does. He really can't see. "Well, not all of us can have my masterful powers of observation." David rolls his eyes. "I'm like Sherlock Holmes without that stupid hat." David laughs and the guy shushes him extra hard and Dean turns in his direction. He mutters something nasty about his lack of a companion on a Friday night and flips him off. "Come on, Watson, let's get back to it." "Righto, Holmes." Dean maybe exaggerates his observational skills, but his investigative technique is impeccable. He discovers no less than 3 places on David's body that, when kissed properly, make him see stars. "So, I have a question for you."
"Shoot,"
David says as he pulls the Impala out of the parking lot. It's such a nice day for a drive, and he'd finally convinced Dean to let him take the car for another spin. "Did you wake up knowing how to drive, or did someone teach you?" "By this, I'm assuming you hired a little old lady to teach you." David groans and taps the accelerator a bit. "Being pulled over for speeding isn't fun, Dean."
"And this little old lady, let's call her Agatha for argument's sake. Did Agatha give you ribbon candy when you learned how to parallel park?"
"No one taught me. I just knew it already."
"Really?"
"Yeah. I mean, I knew some things when I woke up. Basic stuff. Driving was one of them."
"What else?"
David considers for a moment. His head was jumbled that first day, but it was just personal memories that had vanished. Family and friends and faces were wiped clean. All that was left were menial tasks like driving, tying his shoes, firing a gun.
"I could tie my shoes, load and fire a shotgun, and make pasta sauce."
"Wow? Really?" David drums his fingers on the steering wheel. "I know it's kind of eerie."
"You can cook. Dude, you have to show me."
"Okay. Seriously though, no joke. You're gonna cook for me."
"Yeah, I've cooked since, just not specifically for you."
"Well, then what the hell, David? Do I have to put on robes and take vows before you put out?" David sputters and swerves on the road. Dean makes him pull over and drives the rest of the way to the store. David buys ingredients and makes a magnificent lasagna that night. Dean eats about half of it before David makes him stop. His stomach is some kind of bottomless pit, but David doesn't want to push it.
"Who knew you were such a foodie, Dean?" David says, while Dean rubs his middle and index fingers along his plate, scraping up every last drop of sauce.
My compliments to the chef, he says in between licks of his fingers. The garden is David's favourite reading spot. He likes to sit on the stone bench right by the dahlias and lose himself in a good book. Today, it's studying St. Augustine for his ethics final. He doesn't quite understand how Dean does it, but suddenly he has his head in David's lap and he's sprawled on his back on the bench. His cheeks are flushed red. David peers over his book with an amused look on his face. Can I help you? God, I have such a headache. Dean, I thought you didn't want us to do anything here. You said Father Prime would... Father Prime can kiss my ass. I have rights too, you know. You're not a monk, Davy. Dean? There are things I'm allowed to do. Dean protests, his arms waving in the air. You're drunk. Nope, I'm a taster. A test taster. Wait, tasty, test, tester. I test things. Wine. Dean closes his eyes for a moment and then opens them with a funny smile. Father Tony let me taste test the wine. David sighs. You're not supposed to actually swallow it, Dean. You have the best eyes ever. David can't help but smile back. Dean's got this dreamy look in his eyes, and he rubs a hand on David's cheek. He can smell the heady scent of Father Anthony's latest batch. Beautiful eyes. David puts St. Augustine down and concentrates on rubbing Dean's belly. David struggles with his eyes now and then. He never fully grasped how bad a loss of depth perception could be, until the 50th time he reaches for the table salt and misses, drawing back a handful of air. He reaches to switch off a standing lamp and knocks it down, smashing a light bulb on the ground and nearly starting an electrical fire. He jams his fingers when reaching for doorknobs that are closer than he realizes. Sometimes he crashes into Dean when all he wanted to do was just kiss him lightly. But he smashes his face into his neck hard. His nose digs into Dean's skin, and it's all unintentionally painful and horribly unsexy. Dean just rubs his face and threatens to bite him in public. It takes practice, but David gets better. He teaches himself to overshoot when he reaches for things at the dinner table, or to use the back of his hand to feel out the distance when reaching for doorknobs and light switches. He teaches himself to move slowly and gracefully and not be so awkward and gangly in his movements. He's even figured out the exact distance he needs to reach to mess with Dean while he's driving. It's a shorter distance to pinch his arm than it is to rub his thumb along the shell of Dean's ear. Much better results from the latter. Dean gets so flustered that he pulls over and they fall around at the side of the road. When David gets a look at Dean's bad leg for the first time, he gets little shudders. There's so much scar tissue around the slice that's vivisected from his calf. It's lumpy, and the skin is a bluish grey. They're in Dean's room lying on his bed. Just boxes and t-shirts, because Dean only got in about 20 minutes ago, and is so tired that he can't move. Does it tingle when it rains? Dean smiles. Yeah, and it plays jingle bells when it snows. Cool. David bites his lip and places a hand on Dean's chest, right above his heart. So how'd you... You know, what happened? Dean mumbles. Got in a fight with a wood chipper. Ha ha. Seriously? Dean... David rolls his eyes. Work-related hazard, right? You were helping someone. Yeah, Dean answers in a small voice. Kinda. It's not important. You don't need to know. Maybe I want to know. David curls his body around Dean's. My boyfriend, the big bad hero.
You've got to stop calling me that.
Which, boyfriend or hero?
Both. It's embarrassing.
But you are.
David pauses. Both.
Dean pretends to sleep.
I'm not a monk, Dean. I know that. I just wanted to make sure you're sure.
David rolls his eyes.
Dean, I haven't had sex since, well, ever, because I literally cannot remember the last time. I'm ready.
The question is, are you?
Well, do you want to have sex with me?
Yeah, but...
But what?
Dean purses his lips and lets out a sigh.
Okay, there is no but. There is no reason you and I, as two consenting adults, should not be having sex right now.
David tilts his head to the side and gives him a look.
Yep.
All right then, let's go.
Dean turns and heads towards David's bed, shrugging off his jacket.
Wait, here? You want to do it here? We can't. I can't have sex here.
This is your room, isn't it?
Yeah, but there are saints here.
Dean crooks an eyebrow.
On the walls, watching me, judging me. I can't have sex while they're watching.
Dean sputters.
You're kidding, right?
David shakes his head and tugs on his ear nervously.
Wait, then where do you...
You know. Dean makes a fist and shakes it. He's got a lewd little grin on his face that David really wants to smack right off.
In the shower.
Well, okay then. Let's go take a shower.
Can't.
Why not?
I'm quiet. People can't hear me in the shower.
I don't think you're going to be able to control your volume.
Dean scoffs. Okay, first of all, you're nuts.
Yeah, well, I'm banged up in the head and I haven't had sex in over a year, so forgive me.
Second of all, what the hell does that mean?
You're a screamer. I've heard you in the shower. From my room, mind you.
Fine. So there's nowhere on the premises we can have sex. How do you suggest we...
Backseat of the Impala. Go clean it up.
Dean scowls. We're not having sex in my car.
Yeah, we are.
No, we're not.
Dean, where else can we?
Not in my car. Think of something else.
Well, what should we do? Drive to some cheap motel?
The clerk at the desk sizes them up.
King or two queens?
King. Lots of extra towels and all the free pillow mints you can spare, Dean says, leering at her.
David rolls his eyes.
Okay, it's better than the Impala, but at least you wouldn't have to deal with Dean's special brand of people skills.
She rolls her eyes and hands over the keys. Room 109 on your right. Checkout is before 10 a.m.
David grabs the keys and mutters a thank you. The room is simple, plain sheets and decorations. Dean's sitting on the bed, unlacing his boots, while David stands by the doorway, fixated on the wall.
Looks familiar, he murmurs.
Dean stiffens his shoulders.
Oh yeah?
David nods and points at the painting of a sailboat on the wall by the bathroom.
Totally. I've seen that exact same painting in Stan's coffee shop.
Dean lets out a sigh and crooks his finger at David.
Come here.
He's got his shoes off and is leaning back on the bedspread. David sits next to him. Dean grabs David's face with one hand.
You're really sure?
David cuts him off with a kiss, pushing him down on the mattress, sitting on his hips.
What do you think?
I think the saints are far, far away from here.
I think I want to make you scream.
The kissing is fierce, harder than he's felt Dean be with him. David likes it though. The kid gloves are gone. There are definitely too many clothes in the way, and off they come. Dean's hands are fast. Of course, that's when David leans back on his haunches and Dean hisses in pain. Shit! He grabs his leg, kicking David off him. Oh God, I'm sorry. I'm so, so sorry. Dean, are you okay? Dean waves off David's concerns with a slight wave of his hand. It's fine, fine. I just need not so much weight on it, you know? Yeah. David wrings his hands. Sorry. It's okay, really. Just let me. Dean pushes lightly on David's chest until he settles back down next to him. They lie face to face, just breathing for a moment. Just gotta work around it, Dean says. Can I try? David puts his hand just below Dean's navel and Dean nods. Dean has the most incredible hip bones. David's hands can almost just lie flat on them. His fingers are too long and reach over the edges. David holds Dean down with them, carefully avoiding putting any weight on his legs, and leans in to taste his skin. It's far from perfect, really. A mass of scars and cuts, and his muscles are always sore. David kisses every scar he can see in the dim light. Dean makes it even harder when he switches the lights out. Dean, I'm pretty much blind in the dark. Yeah, I know. That's not playing fair. It's more fun, though. Maybe it is, but that's neither here nor there in the end, because it's all just a tease until the moment David gets his mouth around Dean's cock. It's funny. David can put another item on the ever-growing list of things he intrinsically knows how to do. Tying his shoes, firing a shotgun, making pasta sauce, and giving blowjobs. From the sound Dean makes, he's pretty damn good at it too. He loses himself in feelings and sounds and smells. When Dean comes and he swallows, he tries to get a good look at his face, but can just about make out a silhouette. The shadow turns out to be the bedside lamp, because Dean is behind him, arms circling his waist and mouth on his neck, kissing a trail to his shoulder. He bites down and David jerks up. Dean's arms tighten around his waist. I want to fuck you, he whispers in his ear. David nods. Dean really doesn't need permission, so long as he keeps his mouth right where it is. When Dean's inside him, his fingers crisscross each other, holding his stomach as if it might burst open and spill out. David is panting and gasping, and Dean is loud. His whispers are gone and replaced with shouts. Praise for David and his sweetness. How hot and tight he is. How deep Dean can go. How fucking perfect. David just curves his neck more, offers Dean a place to latch his mouth onto, and he takes the hint, wet kisses along the trail of his neck, leaving behind goose flesh and happy hums from David. They grow into insistent moans, and David comes when Dean bites his shoulder again. Dean finishes minutes later. They fall into spooning and forego showers for the morning. It's sticky, and the smell of sweat and testosterone lingers in the air. David dreams that night. Dean is in a simple white and orange kitchen, sitting on a countertop. He's never seen it before, but it's not at all unfamiliar. Dean looks happier there than David has ever seen him. It's weeks and weeks of this, them sneaking around like it's some tawdry affair. Another night of mind-blowing sex, another motel room, and David wakes up suddenly. The light from the window spills in blue and grey. Yellow light from the cars as they move past, sliding along the walls and over his body. He turns to look at Dean and he's up as well. Dean smiles at him and the sides of his eyes crinkle. David licks his lips and moves closer. I love you, he whispers. Dean doesn't move and his smile drops. David clears his throat. Dean, I know you. Dean sits up and grabs his shirt. He's muttering under his breath. David can't hear what he's saying, but Dean's making for the door, so David sits up and throws on clothes. It's misting with warm rain. Dean is sitting on the stoop of the motel, letting his legs stretch out in front of him, tapping his good one in the mud. I should go. Go where? David closes the door to the room slightly and stands to the side, leaning against the wall. Dean looks over his shoulder, but not at him directly. He's staring off to the side. I can't. He scrunches his face tight. I should have never come back after the first time. I should leave you alone, and I... Fuck! He slams his fist against the ground. David jumps a little. Dean's rubbing his face against his hand and finally turns to look at him. I tried. I really did. I kept telling myself I could do it, that every time I saw you was the last time. Dean. David rolls the words around in his head, choosing them carefully. This is about who I was before, right? I told you I don't care about the past anymore. But I understand if... David. If whatever I did was so bad that you can't love me because of it, I get it. Just tell me you can't and I'll back off. Dean's standing up and his hands are on his face, rubbing away the tears he didn't realize were there. David sits back down with Dean on the stoop, Dean's hand still on his shoulders. Listen to me, David. I'm going to try and say this right, okay? Dean visibly steels himself and stares hard at David, squeezing his arms tight. Whatever happened back then, it doesn't matter. You're right to want to move on with your life. But you need to know this. Nothing you've done or could do will ever, ever change the way I feel about you. It didn't, and I'm stuck like this now. I can't leave you. I keep coming back because I... Damn it. Dean trails off. This is really hard, all right? This will never be easy for me. David licks his lips. It's not easy for me. You said it. You can say it, and I can't. David's face softens as he realizes. But you want to. Dean looks away. David pulls Dean close and buries his face in Dean's shoulder. He doesn't want Dean to see it, but he can't help smiling. Dean loves him. They're eating at some roadside diner the next day. David's idea. Dean is wolfing down pancake after pancake. David is grinning like a loon. Will you quit it? Dean snaps, but his mouth is so full, so it comes out mushy. David snickers. Dean swallows. I'm serious. You love me. David, you're my lover. Dean doesn't have enough resolve to tell him no, or to tell him shut up. He just pokes at his food with his fork and pouts. Dean, come on. Dean mumbles something and David prods. What was that? I know. You know what? I know that we're that thing you said. David laughs. You are such a pain. Dean groans and dumps more syrup on his plate. David wants to smack Dean really hard, but he's too busy making sure Dean keeps his arm. It was a cut first, but now it's a big purple abscess, because Dean is really stupid sometimes and doesn't clean his wounds properly. You're really stupid sometimes. Thanks. I'm serious. Now we have to get you to a doctor and get antibiotics before you go fucking septic, Dean. And guess who gets the distinct pleasure of cleaning and squeezing as much pus from your wound until then? I thought you monks liked tending to the sores of us lurkers. David grabs him by the hair and pulls him close. I am not a monk. I'm your boyfriend, whether you use the word or not. And guess what? I actually give a damn about what happens to you. So you're going to sit there and let me yell at you as penance for making me worry and giving me heart attacks on a regular basis. Didn't know I was that good in bed. Dean. Okay. Breathe, David. Let it out. I don't get it. You've been doing this your whole life, and yet you still forget the fucking number one rule of being some badass, evil-killing hero. Don't forget to lick your wounds clean, otherwise they get infected and you'll die of, I don't know, zombie poisoning. And David is cut off by a loud crash followed by a yell. What was that? I don't know. Dean reaches into his bag and pulls out a square device. It's beeping and ticking like crazy. And he raises his eyebrows. David, stay here. Dean, what's going on? Dean hops off the table and grabs a shotgun out of his bag. Cocks it. Whatever you do, don't move. Just stay right here unless I call. Like hell I will. David stands up. Dean, you're hurt. You need me to cover you. No, you're not coming. Father Prime opens the doors. He's white as a sheet. He's back. The Cardinal is back, and he has Brother Anthony. Son of a bitch. Dean grabs his rock salt rounds and marches forward. David follows him behind Father Prime. Who's the Cardinal? I thought you got rid of him. Father Prime ignores David. Yeah, I know. Guess not. Why would he attack now? Father Prime wrings his hands. I don't know. Where is he? In the inner sanctum. Stay here with David. Do not let him follow me. Father Prime stands in front of the door. David bounces on his feet, hearing gunshots and cursing, and he can't help it. He needs to know Dean is okay. Father Prime tries to explain who the Cardinal is. The spirit of a serial killer who went after high-ranking members of the clergy. He was hung in the churchyard in the 17th century. He appears in the robes of a cardinal because it symbolizes the people he blames for his death. Dean met Father Anthony and Father Prime protecting them from the Cardinal the first time. And now it seems our little exorcism didn't work. Father Prime concludes. David hears a loud shot followed by Dean yelling and a thump on the ground. He can't stand it anymore, and he pushes Father Prime aside and charges in. The gun is on the ground, just a few inches from him, and there's a spectre hovering above Dean, pushing his wispy hands into Dean's chest, and Dean is screaming. Father Anthony is next to him, holding his chest and looking pale. David dives for the shotgun, cocks it, and points it at the ghost. Get away from him! The spirit turns and releases Dean, and David shoots, but he's swooping towards him. Father Anthony cries out in a weak voice, His neck! Aim for the amulet! David shoots him in the dead center of the cross around his neck, and the spirit makes a terrible sound. David has to cover his ears. There's wind, and it's so cold for 1 minute, and then the next, everything's back to normal. David runs to Dean first. He smacks him away and mumbles, Father Tony's all right? Father Prime bursts in, and David goes to the old man. Father Anthony dies on the way to the hospital from a heart attack. Father Prime prays in his room, and David and Dean stay up all night drinking and commiserating on the couch. They trade their favourite Father Anthony stories. It's some ungodly hour in the morning when Dean says into his cup, I think I'm going to retire. Bed's right up there. David angles his head. Nah, I think I'm... Dean pauses. I think I'm done. David moves closer to Dean, throws an arm around his shoulders. I've got to stop, you know, while I still have something. While I still have you, he doesn't say. David smiles.
Aw, you love me.
Run away with me. Let's just go somewhere. Just get the hell out of here and try somewhere new.
Yeah?
You can finish school. I'm only 2 weeks away from my paralegal certification.
Yeah, you do that first and then we'll
go somewhere new. Somewhere nice, somewhere safe. Let's go to California, Dean.
Why California?
You said you found me in California. I want to go back there, where it all started. Dean drops his head and clicks his tongue a few times. It's kind of annoying, but David is buzzed and it's 4 a.m. Nothing matters at 4 a.m. You don't want to go back there. We're not living in the past. California's the past, David, and we're... Dean nods his head and turns to him. We're moving forward. We're moving to the future and we're going to New York.
New York?
New York's the opposite of California. New York is the future. Our future.
How is New York the opposite of California?
Texas would be the opposite.
No, Texas is the opposite of New York.
Wait, I'm confused. New York, David. Big city and bright lights. Millions of people to blend in with. Be perfectly anonymous. Be a fresh start. Be big apples on little trees.
You're drunk.
David drifts off, and Dean eventually wrangles both of them to bed. In the afternoon, when they wake up and their hangovers fade, it's decided that they're running away to New York City. The thing about Father Anthony being gone is that Father Prime no longer hides his contempt for Dean through a mask of politeness. He practically sneers at Dean lying on David's bed, laughing and drinking a beer. Father Prime crooks his index finger at David and leads him away from his room, where he's been busy boxing up his books. He walks down to Father Anthony's office. Father Anthony wanted you to have something before you left.
He thought I was leaving?
He always knew you would, someday, when you found yourself again.
Like if I got my memories back?
No, David. He knew that you didn't want to remember what happened to bring you here. He knew that buried beneath your pain, your soul was healing. That you'd be the person you were before, the person free of suffering and evil, a purified soul. David bites back a caustic remark about how Father Prime's vision of a purified soul probably wasn't fucking another man. Father Prime reaches into the desk and hands David an envelope. There's a sizable check made out to him inside. David's eyes go wide.
I can't accept this.
He wanted you to have it. He'd been saving since you arrived. For 2 years he saved when he could. Please, don't refuse a dead man's final gift to you. Father Prime really could lay on the guilt when he wanted to. David flipped the check over in his hands nervously, eventually muttering a thank you. Father Prime sits back in the chair and nods. David fidgets under the man's gaze and then finally asks, Father Prime, I know you don't talk much about it, but I just wanted to know. You said back there that Dean came here because of the Cardinal. How did you know to call him? Did he just show up? Father Prime shook his head. No, Father Anthony knew Dean's father. Well, he knew of Dean's father. Another man of God, Pastor James, was a good friend of John Winchester. When we contacted John, we received a message that led us to Dean. So this pastor, he knows Dean? Can I talk to him? I'm afraid not. He's been dead quite a while. David bows his head in silence. They sit in Father Anthony's office together for a few minutes, quietly praying and mourning their dead. David stands up, and Father Prime follows and holds out his hand. David walks around Father Anthony's desk and embraces the man. Father Prime stiffens in his arms, but then returns the affection by quickly patting his back.
Thanks for everything, Father.
Good luck, David. David begins to get interviews and calls from the firms he applied for. That's when he realizes they can't stall any longer, and it's time to make the trek to New York. The Impala is packed. For someone leading a fairly ascetic life, David has a lot more stuff than he realized. Dean's things are minimal, though, not counting the contents of the trunk. They stay in a motel in New Jersey, and then drive to New York to look for an apartment. Brooklyn seems like a good enough place to start. The realtor's office is full of posters with pictures and prices next to them. David and Dean point at the ones they like, and she smiles and makes notes.
You know, Brooklyn really is great. It's a true melting pot. There's this theory that every American has a relative that's lived in Brooklyn. So we're all connected to Brooklyn somehow. What about you boys?
And what about what?
Dean crooks an eyebrow.
You have any family in Brooklyn?
Nah.
Dean shakes his head and David just shrugs. The realtor taps her pen.
Where are you from again?
California.
David smiles.
Kansas.
Dean coughs.
She's obviously trying to prod them into more than one word answers, but gives up after Dean starts flat out ignoring her. David jabs him in the side and whispers for him to be nice.
David hadn't really realized how quickly Dean could turn on the charm. He's flirting like crazy with the realtor, and David has to bite his tongue really hard and tell himself it's all to get her to cut her fees as much as possible. There's always a deal to be had. It's the fourth or maybe fifth apartment they've seen. The neighborhood is quiet and full of families, not too far from a subway and a bus, but with a garage for the Impala. It's got high ceilings and it comes with a partially furnished living room and an orange kitchen. The walls are white and the carpet is blue in places, and David pulls Dean aside. He's leaning on the Formica countertop, taking some weight off his leg.
I think this is it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wanna be sure? David nods, and they leave with the realtor. They let her lead them to two more houses, when Dean turns to David.
Well?
Yeah, it was the place, with the Formica and the blue carpets and the garage. The realtor giggles nervously.
You sure?
Dean. It's the only place I remember today, I'm sure. The realtor is fumbling around with her papers.
Oh, if you don't remember, let me show you.
Dean puts up a hand and flashes his brightest smile.
No need. Can I have a minute?
They walk out to the driveway. David doesn't know how he does it. Maybe he feeds her some sob story about his bum leg and his boyfriend's scrambled brains. Maybe he tells her some secret realtor code word that he learned, but the deal they get is ridiculous. She smiles as they sign the lease and winks at Dean. Dean winks back, and David loops his arm around Dean's and squeezes him tight. They move in about a week later, collecting furniture in the meantime and arranging deliveries. Dean does most of it. David's been too busy going back and forth with firms before accepting a position as a paralegal with the district attorney's office. He could make more money in private practice, but there's something about the position that intrigues him more. Maybe it's knowing he's helping people, even the ones who can't afford to pay someone $1,000 an hour. Dean doesn't have to work, but he does anyway. He comes home one day covered in grease and beams at David.
You got a job at a garage,
David says, before he has a chance.
How'd you know?
I'm psychic, David drawls. Dean gives him a funny look and grabs a beer.
What can I say? When you roll up in a car like mine, it says to people, look at me. If I can take care of an automobile as fine as this one, think of what I can do for your shitty car.
David laughs and wraps his arms around Dean.
Aw, look at us. We're a two-income family.
Yeah.
David bites his lip.
You're not going to freak out on me if things get too domestic, are you?
No.
You?
Because I know you're used to being off on your own, like some kind of nomadic.
I like domestic.
Dean kisses him.
I like this house.
I like this neighbourhood.
I like the linoleum on the floor.
And I like it when dinner isn't from a convenience store or a diner.
I like knowing where I'm sleeping every night.
And I like having somewhere to be in the morning.
And I'll kill you if you repeat this. But okay, I like spooning and reading the newspaper on Sunday. If it means I gotta vacuum and water plants and clean the garage and be a responsible adult about it, then fine.
David doesn't really know what to say or do, other than kiss him back.
Besides, the company isn't half bad. If you want to go all Susie Homemaker on me, go right ahead. Make me dinner and fetch my slippers.
Fetch your own damn slippers.
David laughs and breaks the embrace to dig around the fridge.
Don't call me Susie.
Dean chuckles and sits at the kitchen table.
So how was work, Suzanne?
David smacks him on the back of the head but answers,
it was actually really cool. Everyone I work with is really nice, and they're letting me help plan the Christmas party, even though I'm new.
Dean's eyes brighten.
There's a Christmas party?
David scrunches his face a little and lets out a small laugh.
Yeah, of course there is. You've never been to one, have you?
Dean swallows his beer and shakes his head.
Wow, you really do like all this normal domestic stuff.
Always want what you never had.
David feels warm inside.
Like he could give Dean the life he's never had.
So, you want to be my date to the Christmas party?
Well, I have to think about it, check my calendar, see what everybody else is doing, and
yes, yes I do. Will they have cookies?
David laughs and leans in to kiss Dean.
Oh yeah, lots of cookies.
The kiss doesn't end and the kitchen table becomes the first piece of furniture, other than the bed, they besmirch with unspeakable sexual acts. At least that's what David thinks to himself. The truth is it's just a big grope fest on the table, which leads to Dean's hand in his pants and then sparks behind his eye. Dean goes to shower the grease and oil off from work, and David orders Chinese food. They eat it on the living room floor with the TV on, then wrap themselves in blankets on the couch. Dean's head on his chest as he drifts in and out feels like home. Dean has taken over the Formica countertop in the kitchen as his personal perch. He likes to sit there and eat, or just talk to David. David likes to sit at the kitchen table like a normal person, but he doesn't say anything. He thinks Dean prefers keeping his leg off the ground when he's relaxing. Dean's just sitting there one day, a jar of Greek olives between his legs, eating and telling David about work. David's walking around the kitchen, putting away the dishes. He walks by Dean and does a double take.
Huh.
Huh what? Dean says, mouth shiny and full of olive. David grabs a butter knife from a drawer and holds it horizontally against his forehead and faces Dean.
Sit up straight.
Huh, I thought so.
What?
David steps closer and touches his nose to Dean's.
Where perfectly?
He rubs Dean's nose with his. Eye level. He kisses Dean and tastes the tang of olives on his lips. Dean moans and wraps his arms around David.
Well, look at that,
Dean says when David pulls back. David reaches his hands around Dean and kisses him some more. He tightens the embrace and tries to lift Dean off the counter.
Dean wraps his legs around David's waist, and then the olive jar smashes to the floor. The sound alarms David, and he lets go of Dean, takes a step back and slips in the oil. David falls and bangs his head against the table behind him. "Oh, I heard that." Dean sucks his teeth in. "Ow." Dean laughs. "You're all oily." "Ow, thanks. Ow." David rubs a particularly sore spot on the side of his head. Dean slides off the countertop and leans into David. "Hey, you're okay?" "Yeah, just ow, really smarts." Dean kisses David's forehead and helps him up. "Yeah, you're plenty smart already." David grabs Dean's arm and says, "Oh my God, Dean, I remember everything. It's all so clear now." Dean goes pale. "What? Just kidding." David laughs, but Dean isn't with him. His expression goes dark, and he punches David in the arm really, really hard. "Not funny." "Come on, Dean." "No." Dean turns around and grabs some paper towels. If there were a way to clean something angrily, he'd be doing it. "Dean, I'm sorry." "Get out of here. You're going to cut yourself on the glass." David looks down. He forgets to wear shoes sometimes. "Well." He leaves. Later, Dean slips into bed next to him. They haven't spoken since it happened. Sometimes David wonders if Dean does that just in case he forgets, and they can just go right back to the status quo. Dean sort of wriggles himself closer to David, touches his nose to his. "Hey, look, eye level." David tries very hard not to smile. Dean tastes like beer this time, not olives. David knows it takes too much energy to hold a grudge with Dean, so he just lets it slide away. David decides that Dean is a lot like olive oil. He moves slowly, but he gets everywhere. He stains David's clothes and he leaves a moist trail along his body. It's these kisses that run down David's stomach and usually don't stop when he gets to the fun stuff. But Dean pulls back and hisses. His leg. He must have been sitting on the counter because it hurt, and then he had to lean on it to clean up the mess. David pushes Dean onto his back, climbs on top of his waist. "I got this one." Dean nods and shudders in a breath. David pulls Dean's shirt off and kisses down his chest, in between the dips of muscles so he runs a straight line to his groin. He eases himself down Dean's middle, unhooks his fly but keeps the jeans on. "You know I hate fighting," David just says out of nowhere. Dean nods and reaches the back of his hand up to David's face, runs it along his cheek. "I love you. I know you won't say it back, but I like to believe you love me too." Dean's eyes make the affirmative he can't put into words. "You're always going to keep things from me?" Dean nods. David's hand moves into his briefs, grabs him. "I'm always going to ask you hard questions." Dean's eyes roll back as David starts to stroke him. "I'm always going to want to know what you know, Dean." Dean wants to say something, but David puts a finger to his lips. He's not done talking. "I'm never going to stop trying to figure myself out. I think it's only fair you be a part of it. You're an important part of my life." David's moving faster now and Dean is getting hard. "I can't be without you. You can't do anything without me. We're stuck like this, Dean." Dean bites his lip and looks up. David is so intense, so fucking hot when he's angry. "So you might as well try to get along, right?" Dean nods. He wants to get along so badly. He wants to make it right. "Don't hit me when you get mad. Don't shut me out. If you don't want to tell me something, then say so. Don't go off and brood for hours and not come back until you feel like it. And when I won't stop bothering you about something, when I won't let it go? Find another outlet for your frustration, okay? Dean mouths yes, and David stops and just squeezes him before beginning to shift around in the bed. Good. How's your leg feel? Fine, Dean rasps. The endorphins always kill the pain. He feels like he could run a marathon when David leans in and kisses him, rubbing their erections together. Fuck me then. And he does. David sits in his lap and Dean sits up, and their noses brush each other. Dean tries to catch David's lips with his, but David moves away, teasing him. When David is close to coming, he finally locks onto Dean's mouth, fucks his tongue in rhythm with Dean, and Dean crashes into him like a wave. Dean's moans hum and vibrate against his mouth, and he feels Dean's leg tremble. Then little pinpricks on his skin as blood flow moves away from his extremities. He squeezes his feet and fingers in an effort to stave off the numbness. Cum splashing on Dean's stomach and his own chest. David breaks the kiss and pants against Dean's forehead, kisses his scar, and Dean is holding him so tight. Soon they're back, lying in bed side by side, curling into one another. Dean? Yeah? David swallows. When you reacted, would getting my memories back be a good or bad thing? Dean closes his eyes and shrugs. I don't know. David knows he's lying, but Dean is like oil. He slides. Of course, there are happier times. Some of the best damn months of David's life. They get back from the Christmas party drunk and unable to keep their hands to themselves. David makes sure to tip the cab driver extra for politely ignoring the fact that Dean got him off halfway across the bridge. They burst into the apartment in a fit of laughter, coats and gloves getting thrown everywhere. David loves how red Dean's cheeks get in the cold, like cherries, and he kisses and licks where Dean lets him. Ties are the next thing to go, and it's clear the living room couch is as far as their drunk, wobbly legs will get them. Shirts are harder. Buttons frustrate clumsy fingers. Merry Christmas, David, Dean breathes into his neck. It's not Christmas yet. Shoes are kicked on the floor. Socks are towed and yanked off. Dean pushes David onto his back on the couch, climbs on top of him. Don't care. Want to open my present. Belts now. David's the only one with enough dexterity, so Dean's belt is the one that goes flying across the room. He undoes his own when Dean whines. What's that about opening presents? David teases him. Shut up. Dean frowns and nuzzles his face. Want to fuck so much. David laughs and pulls up Dean's white undershirt. It comes off and then his own follows. Pants are all that's left. Wanna fuck what? David asks as Dean grinds his hips into his. Fuck you. You fuck me. Fuck everywhere. Want you so much. David unzips his own fly. Dean does the same. They shimmy and shake and pants are gone. Just naked on the couch and moving pillows around, propping themselves up. It's sloppy and drunken kisses, wet with wine and whiskey. Somehow David sees through the haze, decides to take some initiative and rubs his hands against Dean's backside. You want me? He pants. Want me to fuck you? Yes, God. Just want you inside me. Want you as far as you can go. Want you? Dean babbles when he's drunk, can't stop talking, and David gets quiet. Concentrates through the bubbles in his head, focuses on Dean, focuses on getting Dean open, and focuses on getting himself to slide in. Eventually, he has to just put his mouth against Dean so he'll shut up, let David figure out where the lube is. jacket pocket by the door. That's what he says when he pulls back.
Uh-huh.
Jacket pocket by the door. Lube, I need it. Dean's fast when he's horny. It's all the adrenaline that rushes. Then he's tossing the tube, and David catches it easily. Slicks himself up and works on Dean. Still talking, saying filthy things to David. Mixtures of swear words and erotic mumblings. Then there's the moaning. Dean is a wonderful fucking moaner. Dean's moans are enough to make David come on his own. David almost forgets the next step. He's just so wrapped up in hearing Dean moan for him. His cock twitches and aches. And that's what reminds him that he's pushing fingers into Dean to get him open enough to fuck him. And that's what he does. He always pretends to forget to warn Dean. The truth is, the next best thing to hearing Dean moan is hearing Dean scream. Fucking yes, David, harder. God damn it, you're so fucking hot. So fucking, ugh. His body curves in S-shaped rhythms as he slides up and down on David's cock, riding him. David holds onto his leg, makes sure Dean doesn't twist at a bad angle. Sometimes he loses himself in the moment, and then he'll be limping for a week. David loves Dean in these moments, feels love from him, feels everything he's ever felt bad about wash away, and he feels his head clear. There's no doubt, no wondering or confusion. Just love and Dean. Dean Winchester. The rest of his life can be tragedy and turmoil, so long as he has Dean. So long as he has this moment. David's a melodramatic drunk. He comes and says Dean's name, says he loves him and he'll be there forever. Dean laughs and strokes his chest, runs blunt nails down his skin. Leaves little red marks that fade later on. He comes and buries himself in the crook of David's neck, where he knows he fits just right. They breathe and laugh and sigh. David rubs Dean's back. You know what, Dean? I just realised something. Dean raises an eyebrow. What if I'm Jewish? Then I do 8 nights of blowing your candles. Dean nuzzles him. David laughs. That doesn't make any sense. So you don't want 8 nights of blowjobs? I didn't say that. Dean settles his chin against David's chest, and David pulls the couch throw over their torsos. So Dean, did you get what you wanted for Christmas? David asks as he starts to drift off. Yeah, Dean answers, his eyes closed. They sleep on the couch for a few hours before getting up and throwing themselves in bed. More room for Dean to sprawl. Their bed is full of pillows and a big fluffy comforter that usually gets bunched up and thrown around by Dean. He sleeps in tossing fits, and his dreams are always animated with words and kicks and shouts. David doesn't care because he's a ridiculously heavy sleeper. All that David cares about is that his legs don't hang off the edge of the bed. Dean lives up to his promise. He gives David 8 nights of blowjobs and games of strip dreidel for good measure. David laughs and doesn't really think he's Jewish. But this is a mitzvah nonetheless. The holidays are always happy ones. It's really just a normal day when he remembers. Dean's outside messing with his car, trying to install the CD player David gave him for his birthday, grumbling all the way. He's dug out another load of books that used to belong to Sam from the car, and David's going through them one by one. He picks up a copy of Paradise Lost and flips through the pages, noting the presence of Sam's messy margin notes. A photograph that had been holding his place falls out, and zigzags slowly to the floor like a leaf caught in the wind. He picks it up. It says in simple cursive, Winchester Brothers, April 17th, 2008. When he turns it over, it's him and Dean leaning against the Impala. The sky is red and there's blood everywhere. Not just on him, but everywhere. He has to step over someone's ribcage to get to Dean, barely alive on the ground. It's his blood, and Dean's blood, and the blood of everyone he's killed. And he bends down and carves his initials into someone's forehead. Dean spits and swears he'll stop him, but Sam just laughs and steps on top of the knife he's pinned Dean's leg down with. Then he leans down and twists it back and forth. Dean screams and passes out, and Sam walks away, leaving him alive. Too easy. It's hell and fire and brimstone, and God help him, he deserves it. He deserves to be there for everything he's done, even though every second of it is pain and misery. His skin is burning and his blood is boiling, and yet he's so cold that his joints are frozen like the tears on his cheeks. And then there's Dean, pulling him out, bringing him back to the light that stings his eyes, and holding on to him because he really can't stop crying. And he doesn't, even when every drop of water is gone from his body. He doesn't deserve to live. He doesn't deserve his brother's love or pity, but it's surrounding him, and he wants. He's begged and he's pleaded and screamed, threatened to do it with or without his help, and finally Dean agreed. They're with Missouri and Bobby, and he's going to be better. It's all going to be better. And he can't take another second of his life, so he twitches with impatience. There's a ritual, and Sam doesn't care he's giving up everything. Sam doesn't want the name Winchester, Sam doesn't want to hunt, and he doesn't need Dean anymore. Missouri reads the spell, and Bobby's turning the sacred knife in his hands until it begins to glow white. Then he plunges it into Sam's left eye, and he screams as that eye goes dark. With his right eye, he sees Dean. He's leaning on his single crutch, waving a pathetic goodbye, looking like Sam's twisting the knife all over again. He's lying in the back seat of the Impala, bandaged and bruised, and his eyes dead and taped shut. Dean's voice is echoing in his head. He must be whispering to him as he drives. Just so you know, Sammy, I'm going to try and leave you alone like I said I would. Give you some time to heal up. It's a good place. Father Tony's great and, like, the most forgiving person I've ever met. Father Prime is okay, but he's kind of got something up his craw for me. Oh, you don't care. The car stops and he hears Dean putting it in park and then shuffling to turn and face him. A warm hand scratches the top of his head. But you know, Sammy, I told you, I don't respect your decision. I'm not going to be able to keep my distance forever. Sure, Tony's going to check in with me, but... Dean's voice goes lower. I'm going to have to see your face, Sam. I can't not come and see you. Hear your voice, talk to you. I don't know how else I can keep doing this, Sammy. How I'm going to go on without you there. Don't even feel like trying. I need you in my life, Sammy, but don't worry. I'm not going to break the spell. You deserve your peace of mind. Any that you can get. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry I said yes. I'm sorry I didn't fight with you more. I'm sorry I can't stay away forever. You're all I have. And fuck, that's such a goddamn cop-out thing to say, but it's true. And you just made me say goodbye in front of a fucking monastery. So I hope you enjoyed that, you bastard. The last thing Dean ever says to Sam is, "It's okay. You're here now. It's gonna be okay." Dean drops the ancient tape deck in front of him on the kitchen table. It's nothing more than a black box with dirty, gnarled wire sticking out in all directions. It's still covered in dust that floats up when Dean lets it fall on the table, dancing in the air, catching the light. Want to come test it out? I've got Judas Priest on CD. Dean smiles. It's not David, but Sam who laughs quietly and wants to cry, and he says, God, what have I done? See what you get for trying to bring me into this century? Come on. Dean yanks at his arm and pulls him up, and Sam uses the momentum to grab Dean and hold him in a tight hug. Hey, you okay? And it's Sam who feels all the old pain rushing back, coupled with the new. It's Sam who feels guilty for wanting Dean, for making him do everything they've done, for loving him more than he can possibly say. It's Sam who blames Dean for pushing him, for not just leaving him the fuck alone and drawing him back in. It's Sam who quivers in Dean's arms, and it's Sam who will have to own up to this in the end. There's no redemption left. It was Sam who took the easy way out like a coward, and it's Sam who's going to pay for this for the rest of his life. David buries Sam somewhere deep inside him and says to Dean, I'm just really happy you like your present. Epilogue. David isn't Sam. David actually makes a pretty lousy Sammy to begin with. There's no built-in angst or pathos, or if there was any, he probably forgot about it. He forgets things pretty easily. Their apartment is littered with half-empty cups of water, because David forgets he already has one when he gets thirsty. Sometimes they watch TV on the couch, and Dean puts himself in charge of food and water. If David even tries to get up, he thrusts both in his face and he smiles sheepishly, and sits back down and kisses Dean on the cheek. Sometimes Dean likes to mess with him a tiny bit and ask him what he just ate. And when David shrugs, Dean reminds him by letting him taste it on his tongue. He sometimes forgets where he's going and winds up taking the most ass-backwards walks around the neighbourhood. He finds the best little Indian restaurant, and it's right near a payphone that lets you into a secret bar in the cellar below. Dean likes these little discoveries and forgives the fact that he goes missing for hours at a time. David asks questions over and over until he can remember the answer. Dean has learned the appropriate reaction to being asked the same thing twice is not to mock him. No, same time it was 10 seconds ago, duh. Just to say it again and hope it sticks. The thing is that David doesn't realise that he's asking the same question over and forgetting the answer most of the times. And the times he does, he gets embarrassed, grabs his head and looks horrified. Dean has to calm him down and make him forget about being upset with kisses and promises of dirty sexual favours in the car when they're driving. The people at work think David has OCD. The few of them that can put the eye and the brain thing together get that he was in some kind of accident. He's brilliant and always willing to help others, so nobody cares. He's careful and never forgets important things, though occasionally two identical files will be created when only one is necessary. His boss laughs with Dean at the Christmas party and says that he's a human copy machine. David is nervous and anxious rather than moody and melancholy. David smiles with reckless abandon and does these little boyfriend things for Dean that puts him on edge, like the hand-holding and movie nights when David sits through whatever gore-fest Dean wants, even though he hates it. The random appearance of flowers on the table, and David's just too goddamn at ease being his lover. David expects him to remember the anniversary of the day they met, and he can't. David huffs and makes disappointed sounds, but Dean thinks, I was there when you were fucking born, smartass. You were covered in goo. It's still Sam. It still pricks his skin when they touch, and it's still wrong, wrong, wrong. Dean bites back his name as much as he could, but then one time he slips and says, Sammy, did you get the mail? David is so fucking understanding and asks him if he needs to talk about it, if Dean wants to share. He says it's okay for Dean to miss Sam. He knows his family meant a lot to him. Dean fucks him so hard that night that he's the one with tears in his eyes. It's not Sam he's fucking. Not that he isn't crazy about David. He'll never ever say it, but he's in love with David. In a crazy, wrong, head over heels in love with the guy who doesn't remember he's your brother kind of way. Dean knows he's selfish. He's always called Sam the brat, but really, he's the selfish one. It didn't stop with the hedonistic pleasures he tried to distract himself with. The sex, the drinking, and the thrill of hunting and partying in his off times. Chicks dig guys with scars and a car like his, but he couldn't leave Sammy alone. Couldn't give him the chance at a normal life, away from him. Had to have him. First he dragged him away from Stanford, and now he's got his claws deeper in him than he ever imagined, than he ever thought he could want. The truth is, he wants Sam, and he wants David. He wants to mash them together into one person and fuck them like crazy. He's the worst kind of person, the kind that keeps someone to themselves, doesn't ever want to share. He can't let the memory of Sam go, and he won't give up David either. And as much as he wants Sam back, he's resisted waking him. He knows his spell will be broken if he shows David a picture of Sam. He can say he's Sam Winchester until he's blue in the face and nothing will happen. He can tell David the whole terrible story and show him the news reports about Sam's terrible reign of blood and terror across the West Coast, and it won't do anything. But all he has to do is whip out a photo of Sammy and bang, he'd be there. Looking back, Dean never intended for the photo to get into one of Sam's books. He specifically checks them over before he gives them to David. Maybe it slipped his sight, or maybe he subconsciously left it there for him to find. David has locked himself in the bathroom and refuses to come out. Dean doesn't care for that kind of BS, because he can totally hear the pain in David's voice, and whatever it is, he'll fix it. He picks the lock and throws open the door. Both of Sam's brown eyes stare back at him. Neither of them are saying anything. And Dean gets a look at Sam for the first time in over 2 years. Sam's holding tough, trying not to show that he's trembling against the sink, fear in his eyes. They dart back and forth, scanning Dean, trying to read his expression. But Dean isn't showing anything. He's pulled his face tight and wipes the insides of his mouth, waiting for Sam, or David, to make their move. Finally, Dean cracks and grabs him. Sam, or David, or whoever it is, hugs him back just as tight. And he knows this is far from over. Dean's holding him close and thinks it's his fault. He wished for this. He pushed it. He couldn't leave him the fuck alone. So he closes his eyes tight and loves both of them with all his strength, hoping it's enough to bring the two together and make one. The end.